Global warming and the Pope is our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Cal Beissner of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Cal, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. Always good to be with you.
All right. So help us to understand, is the Pope getting some bad advice in your opinion?
Oh, yes. I think that's very clearly the case. The three primary advisors for the formation of this encyclical to the members of the Vatican who actually had a hand in writing it were Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the United Nations, and the economist Jeffrey Sachs from Columbia University, who is in charge, who leads the United Nations Millennium Development Goals Program. And then, interestingly enough, Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber, who is a German climate scientist and, interestingly, an atheist pantheist, if there can be such a thing, but that's sort of his self-description. Sachs and Moon are atheists, Schellenhuber an atheist pantheist. All three are totally convinced that a great threat to the world is overpopulation, so all three are major supporters of government programs to curb population growth and even reduce population through government-imposed family planning, through contraceptions and abortion provided free by the various governments around the world. These, of course, are totally contrary to Catholic teaching. And Schellenhuber, in fact, even says that that with industrial civilization, maximum population for the world ought to be at about a billion people, but he doesn't like industrial civilization either, and so without that, the maximum population ought to be something in the neighborhood of perhaps half a billion. So in other words, we need to get rid of about 95-97% of the human race. These are definitely not perspectives that are friendly to Catholic social teaching and moral authority. And so it's very strange that Pope Francis should have been so heavily informed by them. The people within the Vatican, cardinals and bishops who had a hand in drafting the encyclical, are mostly people heavily influenced by the liberation theology movement of Latin America that was strongest back in the 1960s and 70s. And is essentially Marxism sprinkled with some Catholic theological terminology. Huh. And so this is it's bad ethics, it's bad economics, but it's also bad science, because none of Pope Francis's advisors informed him of some very basic facts about climate change. They are these. First, that all the fears of dangerous warming rest upon computer climate models of how the climate responds to added CO2 in the atmosphere. And here are the facts that have been ignored. First, on average, those climate models simulate twice as much warming as actually observed over the relevant period. Second, 95% of the models simulate more warming than actually was observed. And that indicates that the errors are not random. If they were random, they would fall evenly above and below observations, but rather driven by bias. Mm. And third, none of the models simulated the fact that there has been no statistically significant global warming for the last 17 to 27 years, depending on which database you look at, 18 and a half years, according to the satellite data, which are the most reliable. Now, all of those facts together mean that the climate models have not only not been validated, and only validated models can offer real help about trying to understand the future, predict the future. They've not only not been validated, they have been almost totally invalidated. They therefore provide no rational basis for fears of dangerous warming in the future or any predictions about future climate, and therefore also no rational basis for policy. And yet, unfortunately, the Pope's encyclical embraces those fears and promotes policies that, ironically, would have the exact opposite effect from what Pope Francis very clearly wants, which is...
Yeah, what is it he wants? What does the Pope want?
Well, he wants to protect the poor. He wants to help them rise out of poverty. He wants to see them not suffer from climate change, from human-induced climate change. The problem, though, is that the policies that he promotes in the encyclical to fight climate change are precisely those policies that will trap the poor in poverty for many more generations, or actually even push some who have come out of poverty over the last 30 years or so back down into poverty. Hmm. The reason for that is that to reduce human influence on global warming, the Pope wants us to greatly reduce our use of fossil fuels. But those are the most abundant, affordable, reliable source for energy that we have, aside from nuclear. And nuclear's technology is simply beyond the capacity of most of the poorer countries around the world to harness at this point. So it's fossil fuels that are going to be the means of raising those societies out of poverty. No society has ever risen out of poverty or can stay out of poverty without significant, huge amounts of energy from fossil fuels. So he wants to move away from them to wind and solar, but those are much more expensive. They are not reliable. They're very intermittent, and consequently, they won't work to lift people out of poverty.
Huh. All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Cal Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And here's what's so interesting about this idea is that the very goal Pope Francis has here is would be undercut by what they're actually proposing. Now, first of all, this radio station is coming from an evangelical perspective, and we wouldn't agree with the Pope on certain theological issues. But on the other hand, the Pope is a very important voice for for millions and millions of professing Christians around the world. So this is very significant, and it's kind of sad. It seems like you feel the Pope's been hoodwinked, essentially.
I do, and I'm not alone in this. We issued an open letter to Pope Francis on climate change back on April 27, a couple of days before, one day before the Vatican hosted a conference on climate change, at which it had only alarmist voices. Our open letter has now been signed by over 200 expert scientists and economists and philosophers and theologians on the various different aspects of the climate change controversy, top-notch climatologists and meteorologists from around the world, top-notch environmental and developmental economists to address the economic issues, and then the theologians, philosophers, and ethicists to address the many different ethical issues involved. That letter generated a lot of attention in the media around the world, New York Times, Washington Post, BBC.
Your letter.
And so on. Our letter, yes.
Yeah, good.
And that can be read, by the way, online at climateletter2popefrancis.org. That's climateletter2popefrancis.org. People can read not only the letter, but also the list of people who have signed it, get an idea of the kind of expertise involved.
Now, the expert that you were referring to earlier who said, or it's his understanding, that if the world's population were reduced from 6 to 7 billion or whatever it is down to about half a billion, that would be ideal. Mm-hmm. He's obviously not saying that in this encyclical. You're just saying this is his worldview. This is where he's coming from. This is his ideal.
Right, yeah. Now, Pope Francis actually in the encyclical challenges those who promote fears of overpopulation. And he specifically rejects contraception and abortion and government family planning programs. That's very important to recognize. And a lot of the leftists, the progressives who are celebrating the encyclical's position on global warming are going to have a tough time with what he says about population and sexuality and procreation and those issues. On those, he's standing firmly in the historic Catholic social teaching path. But the curious thing is that he would have taken on advisors like Ban Ki-moon and Jeffrey Sachs and Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber, granted how totally ungodly they are. I mean, they're atheists. And Psalm 1:1 says, "Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly.
Mm.
Yet that's the counsel that Pope Francis and his advisors in the Vatican chose to listen to.
I'm sorry to hear that. Now, it's interesting, too, because, you know, I wonder if in some ways there's an anti-capitalist bias at work here. It isn't so much, you know, there's sort of politics make strange bedfellows, and capitalism isn't the answer, and, you know, therefore they go with these other experts that promote, frankly, yeah, socialism of sorts.
Yeah, that's very clear. And, of course, you need to remember that Pope Francis himself was a strong advocate of liberation theology, which, as I said a bit ago, is basically Marxism sprinkled with some Catholic terminology. Back during his days as a priest and then as a bishop and eventually archbishop and cardinal, he embraced that, and he supported many others in Latin American Catholicism who also embraced it. One of his very first official acts after he became pope was to reinstall a priest who had been removed from the priesthood because of his excessive support for liberation theology. That is a message that is written all through the encyclical. You see over and over again hostility to capitalism. And the sad thing about it is that, frankly, what Pope Francis has seen of so-called capitalism is hardly capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
He lived most of his life in Latin America. Most of Latin America has never experienced capitalism. It instead has experienced what is basically feudalism. Large landowners and own most of the land, and then basically the people who work on the land are serfs.
Mm-hmm.
That is a pre-capitalist and pre-Marxist sort of economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very kind of economy that spurred Karl Marx to condemn it,
mm-hmm.
and he too confused it with capitalism.
But so, in other words, you had the latifundios.
Yes.
And so you would have this tiny, tiny, less than 1% that controls and owns everything, and their children, you know, live high off the hog and so forth. Meanwhile, the peasants can barely, you know, make ends meet.
Right.
Yeah.
They suffer. And that's what Pope Francis observed, and he thought it was capitalism, and he has not closely observed life in the United States, Canada, Western Europe, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, the countries that have been the most shaped by capitalism. And there he would find instead that the wealth is much more evenly divided among people. Yes, there are some extremely wealthy people, but there's also an enormous middle class,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't exist in non-capitalist societies. And he would find also that that poverty has been overcome in these places as it has not been anywhere else in the world. And further, he would find that in these much more capitalist countries, the environment is cleaner. At one point, he says that the earth is coming more and more to look like a giant waste dump, a giant trash heap. Well, you know, that might describe some places in Latin America, sub-Saharan Africa, other very, very poor parts of the world, but it sure doesn't describe the United States, Canada, Western Europe, etc. I mean, these places have been getting cleaner and cleaner and cleaner for over 50 years.
Hmm.
Air pollution trends are downward, water pollution trends downward, solid waste dumps are very carefully managed, and in fact, once they're taken out of commission, they're covered over with soil and they become beautiful parks or golf courses and mm-hmm. so on. So what he's been observing is unfortunately a very biased selection, and it's given him an antipathy to capitalism, to free markets, that is unjustified. And again, the ironic thing about this is that by opposing free markets and capitalism, he's opposing the very thing that has lifted major societies out of poverty. No society's ever grown out of poverty without private property rights, free trade,
mm-hmm.
Free markets, capitalism, basically. And no society has ever grown out of poverty without abundant, affordable, reliable energy from fossil fuels, yet he opposes both.
I guess the bottom line here is that capitalism has bad branding or something. Okay, we have less than 20 seconds to go. How about a concluding thought on global warming and the Pope?
Well, fundamentally, we need to recognize that the scientific evidence is strongly against a major warming effect from added CO2 in the atmosphere. And therefore, there is no reason for us to embrace policies to cut back on CO2 emissions, especially when we see that those policies would gravely harm the world's poor.
Dr. Cal Beissner, again, Cornwall Alliance. Would that be cornwallalliance.org for more information?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Beissner. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jerry.
God bless. Bye-bye.